It has long been said that ideas are everything, especially in the startup world. But what if having a laser focus on your idea can actually hold your business back? In the Ideas Last podcast, Danielle Gillespie interviews startup founders whose success came from obsessively focusing on execution instead of ideation. Each episode dissects what it actually takes to build a long-lasting, profitable startup rather than simply launching one, by putting your idea last.
Welcome to Ideas Last, the podcast about turning initial sparks into big results. I'm your host, Danielle Gillespie, and I'm excited to learn how top entrepreneurs turn their sparks into thriving companies. Today, we're catching up with Jason Sherman. Jason founded a beer distribution platform based in New York City called Taproom. Taproom delivers to tens of thousands of consumers across 32 states through their online platform, a first for a beer distributor in the United States. They stock a wide variety of products from most sought-after craft and microbreweries around the world, offering same-day home delivery to consumers and to New York's top bars, restaurants, and supermarkets. We have a lot to talk about today, so let's dive right in. Jason, thank you so much for being with me here today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Exciting.
Yeah, for sure. So I'd like to kick off by having you provide a brief introduction to Taproom. What is it and how does it work?
Yeah, Taproom is a platform primarily for beer brands, but also hard seltzer brands and now hard kombucha brands and cider brands to really reach consumers online really easily. The easiest way to think of it is like the Shopify meets Amazon for beer and beer brands. That's that in a nutshell, I'd say.
That's pretty cool. So I would just love to know, what was your initial spark for this idea? What was that aha moment you had when you were like, I have to do this. I have to make this product and bring it to the marketplace.
It really kind of goes back to my background a bit. I'm a lawyer by training, Harvard Law School, started working in a law firm and then moved to be one of the first few people at the venture arm for Anheuser-Busch InBev, where I spent a lot of time working in e-commerce projects, whether that was going to the UK and building the Amazon of beer across the UK, or going to Venezuela and Brazil and building a platform that sends orders to all the local beer stores in Venezuela to deliver. We were doing all kinds of e-commerce projects. But when it came to the US, what most people don't realize is it's actually the most regulated alcohol in country in the world, more so than anywhere. Some places outlaw it completely, but the ones that allow it were the most intense, to the point where there was almost nothing Anheuser-Busch could do. And for that matter, any brewery, even the small one, could do online, which is why today you go to your local brewery and pick up the beer and enjoy it there. Very rarely can you order your favorite brewery from California to New York directly from them. And by rarely, I mean impossible. And all that has to do with insane rules. And sort of my legal background spent a lot of time thinking it through. The existing players in the space, which some people now know as, you know, Drizzly or Minibar, Uber Eats, Seamless, that deliver alcohol, were really very clunky. There's sort of another layer on top of the industry. And I said, you know what, there's an easier way to make this happen. So the spark came from sort of evaluating the licenses that existed in some states and getting very close to the existing startups in the space, seeing what Amazon was doing, seeing what Walmart was doing, being like, if I put a little bit of thought into doing this full stack for brands, I might be able to do it better. And that's really came from just a couple of exploratory licenses that got me going.
Yeah. So you make that sound easy, a couple of exploratory licenses, which, yeah. You know, so I'm in Pennsylvania and we're still in prohibition. So exploratory licenses that doesn't even exist here.
Yeah. I remember it really came from my second day at Anheuser-Busch. They do this thing where they make you go to the brewery and actually visit with their huge breweries. These are really factories. And I remember the guy, this is a New York brewery upstate, was saying, there's all these licenses that exist. And there's this one license that some reason allows you to do two parts of it. So you can be both a distributor and sell beer online. And all of us were kind of thinking in that room, like, why don't we do that? You know, why don't more people do that, especially to sell beer online? And he didn't really have an answer. And that was my second day there. And 3 years later, I was still thinking about that license and everything else I had seen. And I said, you know what? That license has got to be useful for what we're doing. So when I say exploratory license, I really mean I sort of explored. It came upon me on an exploration.
Oh, that's cool. But you know what? That just proves the value of experience and talking to people. I mean, I think so many great ideas just come from having these sidebar conversations. I mean, you didn't go in there looking for an answer, that answer, you just were doing your job. So I think that's really cool. So what was the first thing you did product-wise for Taproom? Like how did you get started, or like, what was your beta, or like, what was the first thing you were sort of tinkering with?
Oh man. Like every first time entrepreneur, I really thought I could do it all and change the world. So my first thing we did was get a license in New York, that unique license that some guy told me in a brewery a few years earlier. We got the license from, it was a rather unique one, from a little old lady in Rochester who was selling her bodega. And she didn't know what she was sitting on. Not that I know, we paid her fair money for it. And sure. We took the bodega, moved the bodega down to Brooklyn where we were based. And then did two things. One, we found this brand in Nicaragua called Nicaragua Brewing Company. They made these little 8-ounce cans, very small cans that were for surfers, I guess. And they're like 8-ounce beers. And they said,
stay hydrated.
Right. And it was the first time they were going to be in the US. And we said, okay, you're going to be our first brand on Taproom. We brought 10 pallets, which I didn't even know what a pallet was, but it's a lot of beer. It's 100 cases of beer. Again, I didn't know what a case was. That's a 24 pack. And we put them on a pallet and, you know, jacking them around into the warehouse. And we put up a little website on Squarespace and nobody bought anything. So I called my friends, and like 10 of my friends bought a case. That was the minimum you could buy. So like $60 worth of these little 8-ounce cans. And we put them in boxes. And then we realized that UPS wouldn't carry it because they didn't do beer at that time. And FedEx certainly would not. So we had to deliver it. So I rent a truck. I rented a truck for a day. And me and my wife, we drove all around the city and dropped them off to my friends. And that was how we started. That was like the very beginning of it all.
Wow, that's really cool. So then from there, did you decide that maybe you had something here with this platform? I mean, obviously, you know, you had a brand, you had some consumers, and then how did the ball keep rolling after that?
Yeah, it was basically that. It was finding more brands that we thought could sell well online. We were only allowed to sell in New York at that time. So it was about getting more brands on board. It was hiring people to help with different parts like delivery and warehousing and managing some of these brands. And by the end of our first 8 months, we had probably 15 brands directly that were selling to us directly into our warehouse, which had websites that we had made for them that every time somebody would order, it would come through us. Then we had a little marketplace that only had those 15 brands. And then a couple months after that, we started partnering with the other distributors in New York City, which took us from 15 to 100 brands pretty quickly. And then we started partnering with those brands. So then we then became very fast. It was a small market back in 2019, small market for online sales of beer at all. But we were the only place that would integrate into your website if you were a beer brand and sell you on a marketplace. Therefore, it was a kind of a nice dual model for especially new brands launching. You get awareness on the marketplace and you could sell to your customers on your website, and we would do all the work in between. So that was kind of the next big step in 2019.
Hmm. So you described your product as Shopify and Amazon, a combo of those two. Can you explain that a little bit further?
Yeah, so I guess it kind of goes to the next stage of everything is the pandemic kind of hit in February, March. We were already accelerating pretty quickly, right? We had a lot of brand partners. The marketplace is becoming more robust in New York. We were selling a lot at that point to bars, restaurants, and supermarkets as well. So we became, for the first time ever, the first beer distributor to bars, restaurants, and supermarkets that also would sell to people at home. So we had integrated websites, we had the marketplace, now we had a distribution arm. We were really cranking in New York, and the pandemic hit and everybody in New York wanted beer badly delivered to them at home. the point where we had some orders for $7,000-$10,000 that we were delivering literally a whole pallet to people's homes, sometimes two bedroom apartments.
Wow.
Because people were, I guess, scared. Obviously, it was a scary time, and they needed their beer. And so we were kind of blowing up in the consumer side, which then in turn made almost every brand in New York, about 85 brands and 85% of all brands in New York, and there's hundreds of them, they were reaching out and they wanted to know how we could support them getting online through their website, selling to their fans in New York, as well as how could they be promoted on taproom.com. And from there, it was just, okay, wow, we're on to something here. We're clearly a big player in this space. So we just grew and we just started investing in more warehousing equipment, more brands, more technology to give more tools to the brands. And we're still just in New York. So that was pretty much through the whole year where we ran into some issues near the end where we just got a little too big. We were doing too much. Being a beer distributor is a very capital intensive enterprise. A lot of warehousing, a lot of product, a lot of salespeople, a lot of drivers, a lot of trucks. And we were still kind of a small tech startup, or we were trying to be a tech startup. So near the end of the year, we said to ourselves, okay, we need to stop with so much infrastructure. We were great at what we were doing. We've built so much technology. Let's just bring that to other places. So at that point, we said, we were our first customer. And now we've become the Shopify Amazon version of that, where we take our technology to every city. We find a great distributor in a great beer store or a couple great beer stores. We give them our full stack of tech. And we plug our brands in. They come to that city and they leave in that city through our website or through their integrated websites. So if you're a brand now, you order and your fan buys from your site called Danielle's Beer in Philadelphia even, it'll get directed to the beer store in your area. It'll be delivered just like the brand wants it. All that passes through. So it's a rather complex thing now, but we basically take our technology that we built in New York and layer it in now to every city that we go to.
That's pretty, that was smart. So as you sort of hit this giant, you know, like this big growth inflection point, what was your thought process about how to sort of stop, regroup and move forward? Or did you not?
we were in chaos mode, in the big growth inflection during the pandemic through March through May, where things really exploded. You know, we went from doing 10 orders a day to 600-700 a day in about 3-week period. And we didn't miss a single day of deliveries. You know, we really felt it was our mission to keep this going. You know, there were breweries at the time that had called us and said we were the only reason they didn't have to lay off staff because they could keep sending product through us. And so we really felt like it was sort of a mission to keep people employed, keep our customers happy, get more brands on board. And so all it was let's throw a lot of bodies at this problem. So we hired, you know, 40, 50 people to come work in our tiny, tiny warehouse to keep helping, keep throwing at it. Learned a lot about operations in that situation. You know, I think our gross margins certainly took a big hit. So the learning there was, you know, we really probably should have been a little more controlled in our growth, I think, if we were really to do it all again. Definitely helped. You know, we built a lot of great relationships with our great loyal consumers. But in the end of the day, we spent a lot of money growing that quickly during the pandemic. And maybe a little more controlled growth is what we've learned now is sometimes when you have these big inflection points, you don't always have to dive towards the growth. Sometimes you can take it a little slower, especially if you don't have all the resources behind you to support it.
Right. So do you have a team of mentors and advisors, or you guys just like hit the wall and were like, well, we need to do something here?
Yeah, definitely a great team of mentors and advisors. I mean, I think I would recommend everyone have those if you're running a startup, especially as a solo founder. I was sort of on my own. The hardest thing is often in those crazy moments, having somebody to talk to that has the same alignment or incentives as you do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, calling your investors is not always the best move because there's certain things you maybe don't want to discuss, and telling your employees certain things, you know, not all things need to be discussed down chain. And sometimes you just need that person. You know, for me, my wife is a big advisor. She's an executive at AB InBev, the beer company where we met. So a nice third-party advisor. But I'm also surrounded by luckily, a lot of the great people I used to work with at the venture arm at Anheuser-Busch, who are now in many different locations and many different e-commerce products too. And they all have such good advice on everything that's happening. Then lastly, I ran into a lot of people, and I can't say enough, the very early believers in Taproom, just people I had met, from Danny Saltzman to Nathan Mansberger, who just sat down with me and said, I really like what you're doing. Well, I'm going to help you in every way I can in return for nothing. And one day, hopefully you'll be big enough where you can give me something. And it's those people that you know you can trust and rely on. I really hope every founder, especially slow ones, are able to find people like that, because I would not be here today without any of them.
Right. I think it's super important. And I think it's really interesting, you know, just all of the people that I've met along the way that have helped me. And now I'm trying to help other people in that same, very same way, you know, wherever I can pitch in and help, particularly as, you know, applies to tech products. But yeah, that's really great advice. So one thing that people ask me about a lot is crowdfunding. And I see that you used Republic. I'm wondering if you're willing to sort of share your thought process and your choice to use it and your experience.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I was approached by the CEO of Republic a few years ago, Chuck Pettit, because he was an early customer of Taproom. He was ordering a product from our website. He was a big beer drinker. And he reached out to me in late 2019, when we were still kind of getting off the ground, and said, I love what you're doing. You should crowdfund. And I said, what is crowdfunding? That sounds crazy. Why would I do that? When there was a lot of interest in what we were doing. We had plenty of access to capital at that time, relatively to our size. And I said, why would I go and expose my idea to the world? Why would I do that? And kind of sat, you know, he kind of just hung around and I didn't do anything with it. And then a year later, you know, we had 85,000 customers in New York. He approached me again and said, hey, crowdfunding is picking up. You know, you really should think about it. And he said the big advantage for you would be you can give certain perks. So you could turn your customers into more loyal investors. And he pointed to a few examples, the big one being BrewDog in the UK, who has raised tens of millions of dollars and has hundreds of thousands of fans in the UK. They're the most well-known craft brewery there. They've never done any funding except for crowdfunding. So all of their customers are loyal BrewDog drinkers. They think about BrewDog, they drink BrewDog, they go to the store and talk about BrewDog. And just because they're small investors, $50, $100 at a time, I said, okay, let's give this a little shot and see what happens. And so we announced it, we put it up. Republic was insanely nice. You know, they really helped out. They gave us a lot of advice on how to set it up. They took a lot of the load off our backs. They set up the right lawyers and accountants and got it all together for us. And when we went live, it just started picking up quickly. It was really fascinating. I think announcing it to 85,000 people that you'll get 5% off beer for life if you just put in $100 is clearly a nice play. And if you go all the way up to $25,000, you get 50% off beer for life and a whole beer fridge full of Taproom beer forever. These are very cool incentives. And, you know, we're doing a bar crawl shareholder meeting later this year where all the investors get to come. And, you know, about 6 or 7 months later, we'd raised about $1.6 or $7 million. We had 2,400 people invested in the company. We'll see. I think I'm excited. You know, they are excited. I can see them all over the place. You know, we'll launch something on Facebook and, you know, Facebook is full of toxic people and our investors will go in there and defend us. You'll see things on Instagram where people are defending us, talking about us. And it's all of our investor base really getting involved in our business and helping us and giving us ideas. We've had some amazing brands come through that channel. We've had some amazing beer store referrals that are now Taproom beer stores come through that channel. You know, we're excited to see like that much passion for what we're doing from such a broad base of people.
I mean, that's one thing that I love about crowdfunding is that you have someone that's emotionally invested as well as financially invested. And now you have someone walking around just, you know, promoting you to all of their friends. But I would say, so it sounds like some of your success may have been in part due to your established customer base, right? So this wouldn't necessarily be a great strategy for someone who's just starting without many customers.
My experience was definitely, we were already of a somewhat of a size with quite a large public facing fan base.
Right.
So I would highly recommend it to somebody in my position. I really can't speak for the experience of just launching a brand new company via crowdfunding.
Right. Yeah.
I would say the process is rather long. You know, we started the crowdfunding round from the moment we started was probably early October.
Okay.
And we didn't really close it until about June. So if you are starting a company brand new, just kind of be prepared for that 8 or 9 month waiting time. There's just a lot of administrative pieces that go into it all. So,
That's interesting. But just having your investors, you know, loving your brand and walking around talking about it, I just think there's a lot of value to that, that it can't be expressed on a spreadsheet.
I often tell people it was the hardest $1.6 million I could ever have thought of raising because it's so much work, but worth it if you want the customer base. I'd say if you really want to raise that kind of money, and it's not a ton of money, you can put a lot of time into sort of the general VC, angels, friends and family raising as well. And you might get a better outcome, like more money than that if you spend a lot of time on it. So I often say, if you really want to put the time in, it's worth it for the customers, maybe not for the spreadsheet dollars. Not always.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So what's some advice that you would give to a startup founder or someone who's maybe just kind of got their idea and they're starting to think about launching? Anything that you would want to tell that person?
Yeah. Somebody who already has sort of an idea and they want to take the jump off the waterfall and get it going. Yeah. That kind of advice.
They decide they're having too much fun with their life. So they're looking for a way to become, you know, miserable / elated.
I think I would tell them not to plan much for the next few years. You know, it's, I think it's much, much harder than I imagined it would be. And I had done some hard things, you know, with a hard law school, and I worked at a very hard law firm, crushing me for 100 hours a week, and worked in corporate America. That was insane. But this is the hardest by far. You know, the day-to-day issues that you deal with change so rapidly. Mm-hmm. And as the company grows, your job changes so quickly, and you're still expected to be very good at it, no matter what stage you're at, whether that is you need to be good at packing boxes and driving a truck, all the way to managing now 40 people and 2,700 investors. You know, this is a very different skill set. So you're learning quickly, which is exhausting. You're under a lot of different fire drill pressures every day. And you're almost always, every word you say has maybe very lasting impact. I think, you know, there's one walk back from lunch, I remember, with one investor or potential investor. And I said one comment and that got him in, and that's changed my entire business. You know, they're the lead investors now, and you don't always know when that comment's coming. So you're always on your game. And I would just be ready for a few years at least of clear schedule, you know, get rid of the weddings and the vacations, make sure your life's in a good place, and get ready to really work hard and start learning and figuring things out is the big one.
Yeah, that's so true and great advice. Is there a persistent trouble or problem that you face that you are, you know, continually trying to work around or get better, or some area of the business that maybe just doesn't go as smoothly as you'd like it to go, or anything that you can share with us about, you know, some of your business growth?
Yeah, it definitely changes what I'm struggling with. A lot. And I think the best advice I've always received is like, whatever you're struggling with, just focus on that. So if you're, you know, there's been periods I was really struggling with operations, right? Obviously during the pandemic, you know, we were really growing and we just did not have good operations under control. So instead of focusing on like 10 things at once, you know, focus on marketing and growth and product and hiring. Now, as Jason, just focus 100% on operations, get that figured out, get to do it well. And then move on to the next thing, which in that case, right after that, was brand partnerships. How do we work with these brands? And instead of, again, trying to figure out digital marketing or figuring out how to build a tech team, or figuring out how to like get a new courier system set up or even expansion, could do all that stuff. Instead, let's just focus 100% on how we're going to work with brands. What are the brands' needs? What do they want? And then put it together a nice package. So we spent a lot of time doing that. And kind of going to the next stage, then we started working on our marketing for taproom.com and digital marketing for taproom.com, built a great team in there. And what data can we get out of there? And what are those learnings that we can share with the brands or share with ourselves? So we kind of go through phases. So I'm often what I feel is like whatever I'm struggling with right this minute is probably the thing I'm going to have figured out, hopefully, in the next couple months, because that's all I'm going to be really focused on. And so for me right now, you know, not that we're struggling, but we're in the middle of an expansion, you know, and we just had Connecticut expand. Took a little while, took about 6 months to get there. We just expanded into Philadelphia. Took a couple months to get there. We're expanding into LA in a couple weeks. We're expanding into Atlanta a few weeks after that. We're expanding in Miami a few weeks after that. How can we do it quicker? And I think we're having a lot of, you know, growing pains, a lot of pieces that go into deep integrations with the beer stores and distributors that we work with, giving them our tech stack, bringing our operations team in there, getting a playbook together. This is the struggle of the day, is learning how to expand via sort of a SWAT team method in a very procedural processed way is a totally new thing for me, totally new thing for my team. We brought in some great people to help, but at the end of the day, this is new for the industry. So we're creating something totally new and how to work with these partners. So I always say that hopefully we'll have this nice and processed out in a few months, and that'll allow us to expand into 100 places in 3 months. And that's that's the current struggle, but hopefully we'll have it figured out.
Well, yeah, I mean, I like two things that you said there. One is, and I think that's particularly great for startups and founders, entrepreneurs, is that there is always a new challenge, and that's normal. And that the challenge is usually not resolved overnight, and that you do need to focus on that challenge and set up a good system so that you can move on to the next challenge. You're not just constantly, you know, running around with your chicken with your head cut off, you know, putting out fires or whatever other metaphor I could throw in there. But you want a nice sort of consistent and structured set of growth in the thing that you're trying to resolve at the time. So I think that's great to hear someone who's taken that approach and had success. So what's on the horizon for Taproom? Where do you kind of see the industry going? What would you love to do next with the product? What do you think is coming next?
Our big thing is expanding nationwide. We would like to be in 400 cities in the next couple of years. That's the big one. Because once we can do that, it'd be very nice to be integrated into a Stella.com or Bud Light Seltzer.com. And if you order from there, you get a beautiful package from Stella.com with a chalice and a hat and a t-shirt and a Stella box delivered through our fulfillment network accurately on time within a few hours without any mistakes. And that is really what we're aiming to do. You know, that's the long run play. And if we can embed ourselves into that network, then if you want to launch a new brand, Danielle's Seltzer, you can come to us. We'll get it out to our entire network. You can start selling online. You could build a brand online, you know, and the future of what I believe the next wave of both beer, hard seltzer, wine, spirits brands will be our big celebrity backed brands, big digitally native brands, brands with the ability to build a community online that loves what they're doing. You've seen this in so many other CPG goods. You just haven't seen it really in alcohol at all. And that mostly is because of the clunkiness we're trying to solve. So we're hoping to be that platform for all those new brands, all those digitally native brands to build themselves up on. And that's how you create your community. And then eventually then sell to bars, restaurants, supermarkets, and have a massive brand that can compete with the likes of the Heinekens and the Coronas of the world. The way you're going to do that today is build a big digital following that loves what you're doing, loyal to what you're doing. And hopefully we can be the platform that powers all that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I mean, just taking that clunky layer out and having a great place to go to, you know, find the beverages of your choice, you know, with good marketing and, you know, like-minded people on a platform. I think that's a pretty cool vision. So one last question for you here. What are you obsessed with in the beer world right now?
Oh man, what am I obsessed with? I am obsessed with this group called Nectar Hard Seltzer. Just absolutely obsessed. We started with them a few weeks ago. We integrated their website, delivernectar.com. And they are an Asian inspired seltzer run by these five guys who are just so passionate and care so much that they started like launching TikTok videos, and they went viral because everyone just loved them, which I understand because their energy, their passion, they're really going after it. Their entire motto is like, quit the claw is like their entire motto, which is they're going right awesome. At White Claw, and they're only going to sell online for a long time or very select places. And they're trying to build up a fan base via TikTok right now,
via
online channels, and they're killing it. They're funny, they're energetic, they're young, and they're ready to like take on the big guys in a new way. And the product is amazing too. So that is what I'm obsessed with. I think that entire field of what I'll call more audience targeted hard seltzers. You know, we have a lager that's similar in gay beer. It's just one beer, a lager run by a couple of gay guys who just love their community and wanted to build something that was more targeted for them. They were just featured in, Shep Smith just put something up today on CNBC as maybe the hottest brand in the world. And we really built them. You know, they were
built
being an online community on Tamron. So I'm very bullish in the beer community on these, I guess, audience targeted seltzers and beers that are really trying to take on the Budweisers and the White Claws via online community bases. So,
yeah, that's, I love that kind of energy. I mean, it's such a fun vibe, and especially if people are really passionate about what they're doing. And I personally, some humor and lightheartedness resonates with me personally. So I mean, right. I'd probably buy the brand just for that. But and if it's good, that's even just frosting on the cake, right?
Right. Yeah, it's definitely important, because I think a lot of the bigger companies today, they lose a little touch sometimes of like the flavor can be important, and like you've got to iterate on good product as well, because marketing in the beer industry has just been the main focus for so long now. You know, even me, you know, you go back to Anheuser-Busch III, who used to go, this was back in the 80s and 90s, he would just go to breweries randomly and taste test it and would have such a flavor for it. He could immediately tell any defects in any beer that he was drinking, and they're all Budweiser and Bud Light. You don't see that same obsession anymore. And that is, and then we're getting to that point again, where I think the innovators who have great product that they can make very consistently are going to have a big leg up over the next 5-6 years.
Yeah, I agree. Well, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for stopping to talk with me today. I love what you're doing. I think it's very exciting, and I can't wait to see what happens next for you guys.
Oh, I appreciate it, Danielle. Thanks for the time.
Yep.